Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night right here on a Monday on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and always streaming on the 101.3 ESPN app. Interesting show today. Interesting but fun show today. Some controversy, a great guest in Bob Emery, a really fun story on Tom Brady. We'll get to all that. It is No Shave November, everybody. And remember, we've got our partnership with our friends over at the Vermont Beard and Mustache Company. All you do is go over to our Facebook page at 101.3 ESPN, post a picture of your beard, and basically what that's going to do is qualify you to try to win a prize pack from our friends at the Vermont Beard and Mustache Company. Today's winner is Thomas Page. He's our daily qualifier. I am 6 days into No Shave November. I shaved last Tuesday, which was October 31st. I shaved late at night, right before midnight. So 6 days in now, I am at my preferred beard length. Like, this is my preferred length. If I could choose to have my beard at any given length, it would be what I have right now. And now I've only got 24 more days here to go in November. So it'll continue to get fun. It'll continue to get interesting. But No Shave November, it all goes to a good cause. I'm happy to be a part of it as well. Here's what's coming up on the show today. Again, that interesting story into the psyche of Tom Brady. I found this thing absolutely fascinating. That comes up at 6:40. Before that, at 6:20, Bob Emery, Plattsburgh hockey coach, will join us. Why? 600 career wins for Bob Emery in his 29th career season out at Plattsburgh. Unbelievable accomplishment. We'll get more on the St. Michael's players and coaches who knelt during the national anthem in Saturday's exhibition loss to UVM. But first, I really liked what Alex Cora had to say today. Alex Cora introed as the manager of the Red Sox, the 47th manager in Red Sox history. I was a big fan of what he had to say. I know Arnie disagreed with some of it. I know Rich didn't seem to be as bought into it as I was, but I liked it for a number of different reasons. He talked about relationships. He talked about relationships with players. He talked about not being intimidated by Boston. Let's get into all of that. Let's start here on not being intimidated by Boston. Alex Cora.
That, you know, we're going to be in good shape. I was telling earlier, we had a meeting, and, you know, Boston, for a lot of people, is a challenge. But for me, it's not. This is a city that, you know, I understand they live baseball 24-7. But you know what? I come from a country that we live baseball 24-7. In my family, for breakfast, we talk baseball.
Also said at lunch, we talk baseball. Also said at dinner, we talk baseball. If you want to get in, 802-655-6672. You can do so on the Town Fair Tire text line. You can also call in as well on the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Cora's saying Boston doesn't intimidate him. And we think, oh, Boston's so intimidating because of the media. We think Boston is so intimidating because of the fans. Well, maybe this isn't that intimidating of a place when you look at it compared to what Cora has been through in his life and where he's come from in his life. And he's talking about he comes from a country where baseball means everything, and that country is Puerto Rico. And when you talk about those small islands, those Latin American countries, and Puerto Rico is obviously a U.S., you know, a U.S. Commonwealth, but it's still a Latin American country. Baseball is everything there. When you're looking at the Dominican Republic, Venezuela, which is not an island, but it's in South America, when you look at Cuba, when you look at Cuba, the Dominican Republic, and Puerto Rico, baseball means everything. In some cases, baseball is the only way off the island. Baseball is it. I think Alex Cora knows something about what baseball means to a group of people and the pride that comes with that and the pressure that comes with the honor of being able to wear a jersey that represents your entire homeland. I believe that that is not something that I walked into this managerial press conference thinking that I liked. I hadn't even thought about that angle. We thought about, oh, he's Puerto Rican, he's bilingual, that's good. And that's where it ended for me. I didn't think he knows the pressure of, I mean, he can handle the pressure in Boston because the pressure in Puerto Rico I mean, think about the pressure that, Puerto Ricans are under. Think about, he knows what the game means. He knows the pride in the game means. That's a major benefit to me also. Another thing that I loved about what Cora had to say is the ability to relate with players and how important these personal relationships are. He gave the story about Carlos Beltran. He talked about Beltran's a guy who he played with, he played against growing up in Puerto Rico, in the minor leagues as well. He talked about going from a friend of Beltran, going to a manager of Beltran, and how he handled that transition, or going to a coach of, Beltran this year in Houston, rather. This is Alex Cora talking about a relationship with Carlos Beltran and also just relationships in general.
Carlos Beltran. You know, I played with Carlos Beltran against Carlos Beltran when we were 17 years old. And we played against each other in winter ball. And we played together with the Mets, and we became good friends. I have a great relationship with Carlos off the field, with his family, Jessica, amazing. And throughout the season, although Carlos was huge for the Houston Astros, as far as like the performance wasn't what we wanted. And I had to be honest with him, and we talked, and we were still close, you know. So, I mean, the whole thing about drawing the line, they understand that. But at the same time, they're human beings, man, and you got to talk to them. You got to see how they feel, you know. And I'm going to encourage my coaching staff to get close to players.
He's going to encourage the coaching staff to get close to players. And that's the thing that I most liked to hear, because that's what this team lacked last year. And look, last year's failure, in quote, was not only because of John Farrell. He's not the only reason this team didn't win the World Series. He's not the only reason why this team failed to hit expectations. And those expectations are as they are every year to win a World Series. That is not solely on John Farrell. But what this team lacked was what looked like a general passion. And maybe it's not even so much a general passion for the game as it looked like they lacked a passion for each other. And that sounds corny, because these guys are professionals and we expect them to be businesslike. These relationships and your relationships with your coaching staff and your teammates, that matters. Why did people walk away from the World Series saying the Houston Astros look likable? Because they were likable. Why are they likable? Because they cared about each other. You saw the genuine love, as corny as that sounds, that George Springer and Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa, that they had for each other. And that existed. That culture was real. That culture was not there for the Boston Red Sox last season. Those guys did not look like they liked each other in some ways. Outside of the win dance repeat in the outfield after wins, it didn't even look like the Red Sox had any real camaraderie. And part of that is you lose David Ortiz, and the guy that was the unifying force in that clubhouse is gone, and the team never really recovered. But Alex Cora is going to implore his coaching staff to get out there and put themselves out there and be invested in the team. The manager, I think in the 70s, used to just go to the office, shut the door, have a beer, talk with his coaching staff, and the players did their thing. That's not necessarily the case now in 2017, 2018. Alex Cora, I think, is going to be a part of that clubhouse. And he knows the line. And you are flirting with a line when you want to be so friendly with your team. You're flirting with a line, and I get that. And that's why he talks about the players understand the line, I understand the line. But it's important that those relationships exist, because the team, you're going to be around each other for 200 days a year, more than that. I mean, think about this. You go to spring training from February 15th until April 1st. You're looking at 45 days right there, approximately. And then you've got 180 days of the season. That's 225 days. And then you got another month of the playoffs. That's another 30 days if you win the World Series. You're looking at 250 days out of 365 that you are together. You better like each other, you better be invested in each other, and you better care about each other. And I think that's part of what was missing in Boston a season ago, and that's part of what Alex Cora is going to bring to the table here. Here's the other thing, and we bickered about this in hour number one and on some level. The fact that Alex Cora is a minority is an important one, but understand that Alex Cora did not get this job because he's a minority. I want people to understand that. I don't want the narrative to be, oh, he only got hired because he's a minority. Let's separate a few things here. Alex Cora is a good baseball guy, and the reason why is this. He is qualified for this job because of his resume, and that's a resume that includes the following. Former big league player, more than a decade, more than a dozen years in the big leagues. He had a brother that played in the big leagues, so he comes from a baseball family. That's important. He used to work at ESPN in Bristol. He can handle the media because he was a part of the media. He's been a major league coach before. He just helped the Astros win a World Series. That is all important. He has some managerial experience in winter ball. He's also been involved in, he was the GM of the WBC team for Puerto Rico. He's got those experiences as well. This is a guy who's been a baseball lifer. He's qualified for that job. And oh, by the way, there's another benefit. Because he's from Puerto Rico, because he speaks fluent Spanish, he is bilingual, and that helps because you're in a sport in baseball where there are a number of Hispanic-speaking players, a number of Latin-born players. That, breaking down the language barrier, breaking down the culture barrier, that is important. That is a good addition to his already strong resume. I do not want fans out there to say Alex Cora only got the job because he's a minority. Let's nip that possible narrative in the bud here. He was qualified for the job, and the fact that he's fluent in Spanish is a nice perk. But don't make this out to be, oh, the Red Sox have a racist history. The Red Sox were the last team to integrate. The Red Sox had the Adam Jones issues in the stands this year, the racial epithets being hurled at the Orioles center fielder. They threw a fan out for having racially motivated language this year. Because of that, they now need to overcompensate and go hire a manager that proves the organization is not racist and proves that the city can get behind a minority or a person of color. Do not make that out to be the case. Alex Cora got, that would undermine Cora. Do not make this about that. Cora got the job because of his baseball resume. He's analytically inclined also. Players speak highly of him. Former teammates like Dustin Pedroia, who's on your roster, speak highly of him. Being bilingual is a really, really nice perk. Really nice perk. But that is not the reason that he got the job in Boston. It's Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. You want to get in, 802-655-6672. You can get in now. I want to go to the controversial local topic that we had from this weekend now. St. Michael's versus UVM this weekend at Patrick Gym. It looks as if, based on a photo that I saw, it looks like six St. Michael's men's basketball players and two St. Michael's men's basketball coaches kneeled for the national anthem on Saturday night. Do I have a problem with it? Do you have a problem with it? Get on in. Again, 802-655-6672. I will not tell somebody how to live their life. I will not tell somebody that my experiences are more valuable than their experiences. And the way I think is shaped by my experiences, and I understand that the way you think or the way that person thinks or that person thinks is shaped by their experiences. I will not tell St. Michael's coaches or St. Michael's players that they are wrong for kneeling. I will not say that. I question the effectiveness of kneeling at this level. In the NFL, whether you like it or not, right, the discussion is being had. The discussion that Colin Kaepernick and players who have knelt have wanted to get out has gotten out. Why? You're talking about 60,000 people in the stadium. You're talking about people that are watching games for fantasy football, for gambling, because of general fandom, because it's what's on TV. This conversation is out there. The kneeling, in terms of at least getting the conversation had, has been effective. And I don't think anybody could dispute that because of the reach of the NFL players. I question the reach of players at St. Michael's College. You're talking about a small Division II school that was playing in front of 2,500 fans on a Saturday night in Burlington, Vermont, and that's going to be the biggest crowd they play in front of all year. So I'm not saying that they haven't had life experiences that make kneeling potentially warranted. I'm saying I question the reach that they're going to have, and I think it would be better suited. I think the team would be better suited. The players and coaches who knelt would be better suited trying to make a difference in this community or in the communities that they're from. I think that would be more effective. And I know that, well, the easy answer is, well, they're just college kids. They're not going to get anything done. Well, maybe, but I think they're going to get more done than kneeling in a gym in front of 500 fans, which is what the team's going to go through and play in front of when they're not facing UVM. So it is Champlain Valley game night. We do get a text in. I don't have a problem with it, but I wish they all would have kneeled, not just the players of color. I want them to be united. Well, and that has been a debate that people have had as well throughout any form of kneeling, that the teams, players are free to do what they want, but teams want to be unified, et cetera, et cetera. That's why this is such a complex issue. I will say this also, understand that the people out there, and there are people out there that say, I will not watch another NFL game. I will not watch another St. Michael's game as long as players are doing this. I do not agree with you, and I do believe that you are disrespecting the flag. And they close their mind off to it. They close their mind off to the team. Understand this. If you think that the team or those players and those coaches are so bad because they knelt during the anthem, because they aren't looking at it the way you want them to look at it, then you are just as guilty. If you are going to tell them that they're 100% wrong, then you are just as guilty as you think they are for telling you that you're 100% wrong. And that is the problem. That is the issue. That is why the discussions need to get had. Think about this like sports. Let's dumb this down. If I told you I'm a college football coach and I run a West Coast offense, and I think the West Coast offense is the only offense that works, and then you go and you run the triple option and you tell me the triple option is the only one that works, well, together, we're not getting any discussion there about which offense is actually better, when the best offense is probably a blending of the two and an offense that has both principles involved. Think about that. If you think those players are 100% wrong and you close your mind to it, then you are just as guilty as what you think they are guilty of. Champlain Valley game night right here on 101.3 ESPN at 101.3ESPN.com. When we come back, Bob Emery, Plattsburgh men's hockey coach, he joins us. He just got his 600th career win. Quite an accomplishment it was. Bob Emery, coach of the Plattsburgh Cardinals. He's with us next on 101.3 ESPN. Coming up tomorrow.
Champlain Valley game night with Brady Farkas. Only on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back to Champlain Valley Game Night on a Monday right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. I want to go right on to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and find ourselves Bob Emery, the head men's hockey coach at Plattsburgh State. Cardinals coming off a sweep weekend, beating Morrisville twice. But bigger than that, Bob Emery wins 599 and 600 in his career. He joins us now. Coach, congratulations. How are you?
I'm good, Brady. Thanks. And I want you. As a coach, your life is all about winning, you know. So when you win, your week is good after wins. And when it's not, it's miserable. So, you know, we were able to put a lot of points on the board this weekend and come up with two wins in our league, the first two games in league play. So that it's always positive, and it makes for a better week of practice.
Well, you guys won 12-3 and 3-0, so certainly a successful weekend for you against Morrisville. But you've done a lot of winning, 600 times now to be exact. That's a lot of wins, Coach. You ever sit back and think about, man, I've been doing this for a long time at a pretty high level?
Oh, no doubt. No. You say that to yourself after the losses, how long it feels that you've been coaching, you know, because when you're winning, everything's great. So, but, yeah, I've been fortunate enough to be in a great program for a long time, and I have a lot of wins because I started coaching early. I was head coach at 24 years old. And people don't realize that. And so if you stay around long enough in a good program, I think you can be successful in the win column.
Do those individual milestones mean anything to you, or is it something you'll sit back at the end of your career and think about?
Well, I like to look at, you know, having a good team every year more than anything. And if you got to bring out stats, you know, and talk about stats. We all know in sports, stats can be misleading, and you can make them work for you, work against you. You know, and the one stat that I might look at more so than the number of wins is the number of losses or the winning percentage, which means a lot to me. You know, and so because we want to have a successful program every year and limit our losses, I think that's what the numbers I might look at. When it's all said and done.
Bob, you know, I was having this conversation with Dave Sayward, who's the men's soccer coach at Middlebury. He's in his 33rd year. You're in your 29th year, so I'm going to ask you the same thing I asked him. What keeps you motivated every year at this point?
Well, I love the game. You know what I mean? I love the game of hockey. I can't get enough of it. I can't get enough. I go to numerous coaching clinics in the summer, and I'm constantly trying to learn more about the game. People don't realize how much the game of hockey has changed. And a lot of sports have changed, you know, over the years. So I'm always trying to be a student of the game. That's what's first and foremost. I'm not going to lie to you and tell you the role of a coach has really changed in the last few years. Coaching millennials is not easy. I'm not going to sugarcoat it either way, you know. You know, so I find myself way more of a people manager today than I ever was. Than an X's and O's coach, the part of the game I really love, you know. But, obviously, you're in coaching for winning. You know what I mean? I don't know how some coaches, if they're not successful, can stay in it, because the ultimate highs do not outweigh the lowest lows. And, you know, usually after a win, you're right on to the next opponent, you know, or a loss, you know, just like we had 2 weeks ago here at Canton, you know, kind of rips your heart out. And, that's what keeps me in it. You know, the natural high in winning, you know, and, you know, the feeling you have, when you win a game or land a big recruit, that's what keeps me in it.
Bob Emery, Plattsburgh men's hockey coach, with us here on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. You know, another thing I wanted to know is, as I said, you're in your 29th year, had a lot of success, 18 tournament appearances. Why always Plattsburgh? Why did you ever have the desire to move up to a Division I level, and what kept you at Plattsburgh?
Well, I can tell you the fans keep me here. You know, I grew up in a town of 95,000 people. That was a little over 3 square miles. And, you know, I didn't even know my neighbors when I get up here. The friendliness of the people, being a small town, which took me a long time to get adjusted to. You know, it's the people and the friendships I've made here in Plattsburgh that have really kept me here.
And, Bob, you guys inducted the 1991-92 team that won a national championship into the Hall of Fame this past weekend. What was it like for you to see some of the old guys in one of your more successful teams?
Well, what it was like is seeing a lot of bunch of old guys. Holy moly. Some guys that have really aged. But it was great to see the guys. You know, what means more to me than actually is how they've gone on and been real successful in their careers. I told them when I spoke the other day, as a hockey coach, you got two jobs, you know, teaching life lessons and winning hockey games. And for me to see those guys being successful in the business world means a lot to me, you know. And it was great to have them come in. They're all good fathers, and they've done a good job in their personal lives. And that's important to me, you know. And it was probably my best team ever. You know, we were 32-2-2, Grady, and one loss was to a Division I team, Clarkson, and we played them pretty tight in that game. They had, I think 8 guys off that team playing the NHL. So, you know, we had a real good team, very diverse team. We had some toughness, we had some skill, but we had unbelievable leadership, and I think that was the key why we were so successful.
Bob, you mentioned that word key. Let's talk about this team. We spent a lot of time on you, a lot of time on the past teams, but now we'll move forward to this team. You guys are 2-1 coming off that sweep weekend over Morrisville. What's the key for you guys this season?
Well, you know, the game of hockey, as I aforementioned, has really changed. I think the key for us is keeping pucks out of our net, you know. And when we had lost a few weeks ago to Kent, we played really well, but we weren't responsible for 60 minutes on our own end. And I think the key for us, and, you know, the way the game is played, and many teams play us really, really defensively, you know, and we've lost a lot of games out playing teams. We've got to focus on keeping, opponents off the board and being defense first, because the only way you can beat a real good defensive team now in hockey, teams that pack it in, Brady, in front of the net, if you will, is to play good defense. Good offense doesn't beat good defense. So you got to, the key for us is playing good defense and being able to win games 1-0 if you have to.
Now, you guys have played at home every game this season, every exhibition game this season, but now you're getting ready for a pretty daunting road test here. You're going to go on the road in conference against Brockport, then Geneseo, then you're going to be at Potsdam, then you're going to have the Prime Link Championship where you're on the road at Middlebury. You don't even play another home game until Friday, December 8th. So how do you get this team ready to go on the road here for more than a month?
Well, I mean, I think the road can be good. You know, all the guys are together all the time. You know, they eat together, they skate together, they ride the bus together. So I think it could be good. You know, obviously, if you win, it's even better. You know, but we only have two seniors. You know, and it's going to be a real test for us. I'm going to be honest with you. And I think the key for me is being patient this year. You know, I've had a lot of teams that peaked way too early. You know, and then last year our team peaked at the end, and you know, ended up winning the SUNYAC championship. So, you know, we got to be patient. We got to go out there and play. You know, try to control the things that we can control. You know, puck management, hardworking, sacrificial hockey players that think defense first.
Bob Emery, he's the men's hockey coach of Plattsburgh State, now the owner of 600 wins in his coaching career in his 29th season. The Cardinals are 2-1. They're back in action this coming Friday on the road at Brockport. Bob, best of luck the rest of this season. Even against my Oswego Lakers, I'll wish you good luck, and congratulations on all the success.
Thanks, Brady. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Bob Emery, there he goes. Hard to believe. All this time, I never thought I'd be wishing Plattsburgh people good luck, but it is cool. Other people congratulating Bob Emery as well. We get an unnamed texter who I see now text in. Tell Coach Emery congrats on 600 from referee number 26. I don't know if that's a SUNYAC ref. I don't know if that's a high school ref, but your congratulations are heard by Coach Emery on the way out. So appreciate Coach Emery joining us. Hard to believe, man. 600 career wins, head coach at 24, one of the most established programs in all of Division III hockey, but even just college hockey in general. And that team is going to go through a really big gauntlet over the next month. I mean, they're not, again, not going to be at home until December 8th. We're talking about more than a month from now, away from Plattsburgh, away from Stafford. But when we talk about college athletics, the bonding experience created on the road, that's real. That's absolutely real. Champlain Valley game night. Semi-breaking news here. Not that we didn't know it, but now we officially know it. Corey Kluber, Chris Sale, Luis Severino are the three finalists for the American League Cy Young that just put out by the Baseball Writers of America. Sale, I doubt, has an opportunity to win. Kluber should win that one. He finished the year much better. As Arnie always says, not what have you done for me, what have you done for me lately? And Sale was not very good at the end of the season. You know, it wasn't bad, but what he did in the beginning of the year was so unbelievable that it was hard, just hard to match up. I am pumped in 2 weeks, well, not even 2 weeks, a week and a half, Friday the 17th, so not this Friday, but next Friday, we are going to ESPN Studios in Bristol. We're taking our man Owen Reinders with us, him and a guest. He won our ESPN trip qualifier, so very, very happy to be going back to Bristol. The guest list is already forming, and I'm already excited about it. I'm always excited about it when I go there, but we'll look forward to bringing you a great show again from Bristol a week from Friday. Last time we were there, I mean, it's going to be hard one. It's going to be hard to outdo ourselves. I'm going to try. It's going to be really, really hard. Last time we were out there, who'd we have on? We had Drew Brooks, the producer of Mike and Mike. We had Carrie Chow, SportsCenter anchor. We had Ryan Russillo, Adnan Virk, Stu Gotts, Field Yates. It was just crazy, the people that we talked to. Really, really fun stuff. We've got some guest lists already in the work here, already in the works, rather. We've got some guests already confirmed, and the names are already really good, so I'm really, really pumped for that as well. Congratulations on the local front also, not only the Plattsburgh men's hockey team with a good weekend. How about Middlebury? Middlebury men's soccer and our friend Dave Sayward, their season continues on a little bit. They get an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament. Plattsburgh field hockey, or rather Middlebury field hockey, goes to the NCAA tournament as well. And also Castleton women's soccer headed to the NCAA tournament. So fall season's not over yet for local athletes, not only yet for local teams and local programs. So really, really fun to see those seasons continue on and see the winter and the fall mesh here. And when we come back, a really interesting story on the development of Tom Brady. Also, Masahiro Tanaka opting in is good for the New York Yankees and the Boston Celtics. They go for 9 straight tonight. All that and more next on Champlain Valley Game Night, right here on 101.3 ESPN. Coming up.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, final segment, Champlain Valley Game Night right here on a Monday, 101.3 ESPN. We go up until 7 o'clock, and then at 7:45, we've got coverage of the NFL. Detroit at Green Bay, Lions at Packers, NFC North battle over on 960 The Zone, Celtics at the Hawks. Celtics looking for 9 straight. We'll get into that in just a couple of minutes, but I want to start this segment right here with Tom Brady. A really, really fascinating story about Brady. It appeared in Boston.com, and it focused on Brady's time at Michigan and focused on his rise, really, that he's been defying odds his whole career. And when you think about it, a guy who's been in the league since, what, 2000, how many more stories that we didn't know about can really come up? And when I found out all this and I read this story, you know, from the first word to the last word today, I found it really fascinating. And it talked about how when Brady went to Michigan, it's basically all about Brady's motivation and how Brady's able to stay so motivated. So we'll start with that premise. Brady went to Michigan. Two of the three coaches who recruited him were gone by the time he got on campus. So there was nobody there to fight his battles for him right away, pretty much. He had to prove the two guys who he sold himself on, they left. So he had to start from scratch again the minute he got there. And we know he was at sixth string. We know he had to fight his way up through the depth chart. What you might not remember, what I didn't remember, is that when he was a junior and he was finally ready to start, well, they had this hotshot freshman come in, Drew Henson. And Drew Henson, as I remember, he ended up playing for the Cowboys in the NFL, and they were in love with him because of his athleticism, and he also got drafted in pro baseball. He played baseball while he was playing quarterback at Michigan and was in the Yankees organization. So Brady's ready to start, and Henson is getting praise from all the coaches, and they keep rotating Brady in. And then when they finally go to Brady, team goes on a roll and wins, I want to say it was 8 straight. Senior year, you think, okay, Brady's team here, they just won 8 straight, they won a big bowl game. Same thing happens. The team struggles with Brady and Henson in the rotation. Brady finally gets the job. They win 5. He wins the last 5 games, wins a bowl game again, comes back from some massive deficit, wins 35-34 in his final game at Michigan. And then you go into the NFL where he's taking over for Drew Bledsoe and staving off the would-be successors. And Matt Cassel has a good year when he's out, and now Jimmy Garoppolo. And it was all about how Brady basically had learned the hard lessons of pro football, the hard lessons of life at an early age. And that's where his intrinsic motivation comes from. And I thought it was really interesting because Tom Brady is another example of a long line of athletes and a long line of people whose experiences growing up shape them in to what they are as adults. And it doesn't work that way just in professional sports. It works that way in life. Tom Brady, in his mind, is always that guy who was having to reprove himself over and over and over again. And the guy who, even though he did the job and did it well, there was always somebody who people liked a little bit better. And Jimmy Garoppolo was just the latest in the long line of guys like Drew Henson who were knocking on the door to try to take Tom Brady's job that he had to hold off. And that motivation, it just continues to show me that what happens to you as a youth and how you are perceived as a youth, that doesn't just go away. That doesn't stay. Like just because you've conquered one goal, that those feelings of sometimes even inadequacy or insecurities from your youth, those don't just go away. You're always that person. And if you ever stop being that person, that's when you get unmotivated, lazy, and then you get your job taken. I mean, think about how many stories of people there are who have overcome odds and have ended up winning out. Look at Richard Sherman. Richard Sherman comes from Compton, dangerous area, goes to Stanford, plays wide receiver, gets converted from wide receiver to corner because he's not good enough. So he overcomes the obstacles of getting out of Compton, overcomes a position change, overcomes being a fifth-round pick, and that's where that brash, in-your-face arrogance comes from always having to prove doubters wrong and having to prove naysayers wrong. Look at, and think conversely, how many people who have, quote, had everything handed to them really work out? How many of those people have the intrinsic motivation to keep going? I would argue there's two of them that I can think of off the top of my head that have had everything handed to them on a silver platter and have been told their whole life how great they are and haven't had to overcome a lot of odds in certain situations that have really worked out. Peyton Manning is one. Peyton Manning had everything set up for him growing up. NFL life, comfortable life, name recognition, his last name got him a lot of opportunities in life that maybe other people couldn't get. Peyton Manning still won two Super Bowls, and still, even though he didn't win more than two Super Bowls, is still one of the most motivated athletes of all time. That's one. Bryce Harper is another one who we heard about him when he was 16 years old, and he has worked out. Other than that, LeBron, yeah, they called him the chosen one, but LeBron overcame not having a father, overcame living in a poor area. He overcame sleeping in different people's apartments to become what he is. Allen Iverson came from a tough life, tough background. Those kind of stories, they stick with you. And I think about this. I shed a little bit of light on Friday about my path and my job and my job history. Well, I mean, I'll shed a little bit more here. When I worked in Albany, here's what happened. I worked my tail off. I thought I worked harder than everybody else. I don't know if I did, but doesn't really matter. I thought I worked my tail off. I thought I deserved to be full-time. That never happened. It never came. They promoted this person and that person, and I brought in this person from the outside, and it never happened. And then I told myself that when I left and I wanted to leave and I came here and I could not be happier, I told myself that when I left, I was going to try to prove my old station wrong and say, look, you could have promoted me and we could have done great things together, and now I'm going to go and try to do great things for everybody else, and I will try to not let anybody outwork me. And a lot of people have that attitude because I know how special this job is. I know how many people out there want this job that are in the business or in school or even sitting at home saying, man, I wish I could do what he's doing. I don't want anybody to work harder than me. I will try to outwork everybody. And that's how Tom Brady feels on a level multiplied by 100 times just me. But it's because when he was a youth and because when he was coming up, he was never secure. There was never that feeling of able to sit back, be fat and happy, fat, lazy and happy, and think about what you've accomplished. There was no time to reflect on positives. It was, there's the first sign of a negative. Okay, that guy's coming for you. And that guy in Michigan was Drew Henson, and that guy in the pros was Jimmy Garoppolo. And so it's even more amazing how you ask how a guy who's got it all seemingly, right? Millions of dollars, supermodel wife, 5 championships, playing at 39, 40 years old. Why is he still doing it? What keeps him coming? Well, it's those experiences as a youth that told him that no matter what you've done, it was never enough and you always have to do a little bit more. It's Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Masahiro Tanaka officially opted back in to his contract with the Yankees. 3 years, $67 million is the number. And I think this is a good thing for the Yankees. Buster Olney told us a few weeks ago that if Tanaka opted out, he didn't think the Yankees would be overly upset by it. And part of it is because of the money, $67 million. And part of it is because of the uncertainty around Tanaka's elbow and the health of that elbow. And I understand that. But I think this is only a good thing because $67 million at this point is, yes, it's a lot, but it's not the kind of money you would have to pay to a current free agent starter. I mean, Jake Arrieta projected 5 years, $100 million. Yu Darvish projected 6 years, $160 million. Do you want to go and grossly overpay for those starters? No, probably not, because you want to save that money. And why do you want to save that money? You want to save that money because next year you're looking at Josh Donaldson's a free agent, and Manny Machado's a free agent, and Bryce Harper's a free agent. You want to look at those guys and say, that's where I want to spend my money. Secondly, so now you can save that money. $67 million is a lot, but it's not the $100 or $150 that you might have to give to another guy in the market. So you're saving some money by just keeping Tanaka. Two, his ceiling is high. His ceiling is higher than any of the internal candidates you have to replace him right now. Any of the guys in the minors, any of the young prospects, next year Tanaka's ceiling is higher. Maybe Justice Sheffield in 5 years better than Tanaka. But next year, Tanaka's ceiling is the highest. You keep him there with Sonny Gray, with Luis Severino. I like to think, if all healthy, pretty good three. Pretty good threesome right there. Pretty good trio of pitchers. Then I throw in probably CC Sabathia, and then probably Jordan Montgomery. And I like where I'm at, 1 through 5, because I'm going to lose Michael Pineda in free agency. I'm going to lose Jaime Garcia in free agency. I've still got that good bullpen, so I get a guy who's experienced, who I think can get me through 5-6 innings every time out there. And then we go to work and we try to win it with our bullpen, just like we did this year. And lastly, as much as I am a proponent of the young kids, what comes with young kids, young pitchers at 22, 23 years old, often innings limitations. Well, I don't want innings limitations, because next year I'm thinking I can win the World Series. This year was, let's see what happens. Next year is, I think I can win the World Series. So if I think I can win the World Series, I don't want to have a guy who can only throw 150 innings out there and rely on that guy and then wonder what happens with him at the end of the year. Tanaka opting in gives me the flexibility to bring some of these kids along slowly at the pace at which they deserve to be brought along, and I don't have to rely on them too much. Tanaka opting in, good thing. Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. The Celtics, they go for 9 straight tonight. Listen to the numbers here. This is the longest win streak in NBA history immediately following an 0-2 start. So they're 8-2. They've won 8 straight. They've allowed fewer than 95 points each of their last 8 games, all wins. Next up tonight, the Atlanta Hawks. You can hear it on 960 The Zone. Coverage starts in 7 minutes from now. I talk about Jason Tatum. I thought he would win Rookie of the Year. Well, he's shooting 52% from 3. I love that. Al Horford all of a sudden 52% from 3. And Jaylen Brown 43% from 3. This team is being dynamic, getting to the hoop, being dynamic away from the hoop on the perimeter as well, and extends beyond Kyrie Irving. That'll do it for us today. We'll have Monday Night Football on 101.3 ESPN, Celtics on 960. Thanks to Bob Emery for joining us in Champlain Valley Game Night. You missed any of the show? You can find it, as always, in full podcast form or individual segments over on 101.3ESPN.com and on our social media channels. So we look forward to you guys joining us tomorrow. Tom Caron, Zach Cox. We'll have the Cat's Den here on Champlain Valley Game Night, where we will talk a ton of UVM. We've got some really good special guests joining us. How about Rob Dow, new head coach, UVM men's soccer? They are in the playoffs. We'll also talk with the voice of the Kentucky Wildcats. The voice of the Wildcats, he will join us tomorrow, and we'll get ready for UVM and Kentucky on Sunday as we open up the college basketball season. Hard to believe daylight savings is here. College basketball is here as well. For intern Devin, for intern Lance, for intern Jordan, for Rich and Arnie, I'm Brady, everyone. Enjoy Monday Night Football right here on 101.3. Enjoy the Celtics on 960. We'll see you tomorrow.